Hey, everybody. This is Brett, and welcome back to what is pretty much not School Sucks Podcast. I don't even know how to introduce this. This is the weirdest show that I've ever put out, and the only reason I'm putting it into the podcast feed, it has nothing to do with education. So if you're interested in serious shows, I promise there's a long string of them coming, but this is very, very silly. And the only reason why I'm so compelled to put it here is it's probably the most fun I ever had doing a podcast. Now, a little bit of a backstory. I used to fill in as a host of a show called Wheels Off Liberty. It's another show in the Liberty Radio Network along with School Sucks Podcast. This is not a serious show. Even though they do look at the issues of the day through a libertarian lens, it is very silly. It is a comedy show, first and foremost. And I had the privilege of filling in as a host pretty much all throughout 2011. And it was Mandrick, who's been on the show in the past, and you'll hear him again on the show in the future, who helped orchestrate that. So it was a fun thing for me to do. But there is a Wheels Off Liberty group on Facebook, and one of the participants in this group, a guy named Brian Hagen, who is actually a professional radio guy, he does news, and he used to do a morning show down in Kansas, started feeding this idea into the group that there was more to Wheels Off Liberty than meets the eye. And I really support this because I wanted to start a Wheels Off Liberty as disinformation conspiracy for a long time, but I just didn't have, you know, the get up and go to do that. But Brian did. And Brian also has a podcast. I can't remember the whole name of it. It's something like the Fajita, Fun Time, Get Down, Good Time, Hoot Nanny. What it is it's like, from what I can tell, I've listened to a handful of episodes, it's kind of like a parody of the Alex Jones Show. And wait till you hear this guy's voice. I think you're going to love this. So maybe if you know Wheels Off Liberty or you're familiar with Alex Jones, this might be worth a listen. But I agreed, after listening to a few of his shows and just laughing out loud several times, that I would go on and give him what he wanted as far as like a insider whistleblower story about Wheels Off Liberty that I thought about on my way home from work, maybe 15 or 20 minutes, and then I pretty much made up as I went along. I had a handy book by my side called Everything is Under Control. It's by Robert Anton Wilson, who wrote the Illuminatus trilogy, and it's an encyclopedia of conspiracy theories. Now, I just want to mention this as well, that even though this narrative, this story, is entirely the product of my imagination, almost every group, many of the projects, many of the organizations mentioned in it, with very few exceptions, are actually real things. So this was a very, very fun 40 minutes. And if you're familiar with Wheels Off Liberty or Alex Jones, I think you might enjoy this. A lot of new shows are coming soon. They won't be this silly. And that's going to include what I thought would be one show, expanding the video that I made called The American Way. It's looking like that's going to turn into three shows, maybe 4 or 5 hours of material total, and I wanted to get that done before the Logic series progresses, but that will take us to the end of April, into May, maybe even into June. The Logic series, that is. Into June, probably. So that's what's new. Stick around after this for new subscriber geography trivia. Thank you for listening, and take care.
Idiot.
That's one of the dumbest things I think you've ever said on a long list of dumb things.
All you ever think about is that filthy thing in your pants, isn't it?
You can slap cheese and butter on it and put it on bread and toast it, but that don't make his arms any longer.
What does that have to do with John McCain?
Hey, Mike, look, it's doing little circles right now.
Ugh.
So, what you drinking on tonight, Mike?
What you drinking on, Jamie?
Now, look at me, Mike, and I'm going to philosophize a little bit tonight.
Moron.
Stefan Molyneux, it's...
Well, look at Jamie stepping up in the world.
Thank you for your listening pleasures.
Stefan Molyneux, clicks.
I'm going to put him on the list of people that I hate.
It's German, idiot.
What do I say there?
Pull your damn pants up.
never trade your government for...
He got what?
I'm about to come over this table and hit you right in the mouth.
Oh, she makes my pants go so crazy.
I'm telling you, dude, I'm not a good speller.
It's certainly no secret what that joyous sound means. Another edition of your fajita fun time, good time, get down, hootenanny blowout extravaganza. So good to have you here once again. And tonight's show is going to be extra special and extra long, to say the least. We're going to expose tonight, as I had told you during our last fajita fun time extravaganza, the inner workings of the Wheels Off Liberty. So we've talked about it and we've talked about it and we've almost beat it to death now. And I have not been able, with 100% accuracy, with total certainty, although I know it in my gut and that's good enough for me and it should be good enough for you too, that these idiots that they portray themselves as, these Wheels Off Liberty guys, are not idiots at all. In fact, I think they're quite brilliant, COINTELPRO, lizard people, so to speak, of the New World Order trying to lead us down the rabbit hole into doom, death, and destruction. And I'm very proud and pleased to welcome tonight a very special guest, someone who has been there in the trenches, someone who has sat side by side with these two clowns and has actually got to see inside their minds and the inner workings. I'm very proud and pleased to introduce Mr. Brett Vinat. Brett, how are you?
I'm very good, Brian. Thank you for having me on the show. I think this is incredibly important, and I look forward to getting to the bottom of this with you tonight.
Well, Brett, I certainly do, too. And as I said in the introduction, you certainly are someone who has tracked and traced these guys. Now, it's my understanding... I remember it was some months back when you were actually sitting in as part of this Wheels Off Liberty.
Yes.
But it would also be my understanding that there was a little more to your stint with these guys than the average listener might have believed. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I need to start the story with the day that I met Jamie Crane. I, in addition to doing my podcast, School Sucks Podcast, a lot of people don't know this, but I am also a quite successful international businessman, and my travels take me frequently to Ardmore, Oklahoma, which is kind of a hub for, you know, international businessy kind of things.
Right.
So this is sometime, I believe, during 2010, 2011, and I'm just walking down the street with my attaché case after a meeting, and I hear in the alley a rumbling in the alley in Ardmore. So from that, there comes this very familiar voice, and it kind of sounds like Chef from The Muppet Show, but if he spoke English with a southern accent. That's how I would describe it. Like, greatness. Yeah. So
sort of like this kind of voice.
Exactly. But it was more unintelligible than that. So I say, I know that voice. I've heard that voice. So I go into the alley and there I see Jamie Crane. And I've only seen pictures of him, right? Because at this point, Wheels Off Liberty has come and gone. They did 70-something episodes, and then the show just disappeared.
Yeah, just out of the blue, it's gone.
Exactly. Which should have raised red flags right there. So I see him, and I approach him cautiously, because very quickly I come to the understanding that he is not well. Something is wrong with him. He's just sitting Indian style in a pile of garbage talking to himself. And at first I'm thinking that maybe, you know, the show is what gave him meaning, and when the show stopped, he just became this homeless drunk. So I approach him, and I say, Jamie, I'm Brett from School Sucks. I used to be on the LRN, the Liberty Radio Network, with you. And he turns, and he looks at me, and I'll never forget this look. He's cross-eyed, And his mouth is agape, and you can see his tongue just poking out of the left side of his mouth. And there's this long silence. And it's very uncomfortable. It goes on. It seems like it goes on for minutes. But then suddenly he's like, oh, dude, let's do a podcast. And he gets all excited. So he starts rustling around in the garbage, right? And this is where I realize what a desperate situation this poor man is in. He pulls out an empty pizza box from the garbage, and he opens it in his lap, and he's like, I just got to get my laptop ready. And I'm like, this person is either drunk or on drugs. He's got an empty pizza box. He thinks it's his laptop. And I try to explain to him that we can't record a podcast with a pizza box, but he's not comprehending any of it. So
this is a shame. This is a real shame.
It is.
And frankly, I'm feeling for the guy at this point.
Sure. So after spending some time in this alley with him sitting in this pile of garbage, observing him, I come to the conclusion that he is not drunk at all. He has not chosen this life of homelessness at all. No, he was drugged by somebody and left in that alley. But that's not where the story begins, obviously.
Well, take us over. Okay, let's rehash that for just a moment. He's sitting there, and I want to ask you, too, while he's looking at you with this stupid face,
yeah,
is he drooling as well? I mean, was that one of the giveaways that he might have been drugged?
His shirt is soaking wet with drool. At one point, he starts trying to record this podcast with me as his guest, and he's talking as if Mike is there, and he has this coffee cup sitting next to him that he had been using as a toilet. This is where it gets pretty grim. And he starts doing Mike's parts of the show for him. He's speaking in Mike's voice. So I see that he's experienced some kind of trauma and that it possibly relates to Mike, but that's just a guess at this point. So he's like, Mike, what are you drinking on? And then he'll do Mike's voice, and he'll be like, I'm drinking the greatness of my own urine. And he takes a big swig out of this coffee cup that he'd been using as a toilet. And I'm horrified. I'm horrified. I want to help him, but I don't know what to do.
Let me ask you this question, Brett, and our special guest tonight is Brett Vinat, who has gone beyond and behind the curtain of the Wheels Off Liberty guys. After this meeting, this horrific meeting, while Jamie Crane is drinking urine and talking into a pizza box, what happened next? How did you end up embracing him and befriending him?
Well, I think in order to get to that part of the story, at this point, we've got to go way back.
Okay.
Because this is a very complex web that has several tangles and cross points. And in the 1950s, you probably know that there was this thing called the Red Scare. So what we had in America prior to that, we had a lot of very trusting communities. People left their doors unlocked, and we get into this real culture of paranoia that begins with McCarthyism. It moves on into the 60s when the civil rights movement begins and the Vietnam War protests. And eventually, during the Richard Nixon administration, they come up with something called COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program. And what the mission of COINTELPRO is, as you already mentioned this earlier in the show, but it is infiltration. It is intelligence gathering and infiltration,
right,
of what they perceive to be radical organizations. But by the early 1970s, they don't have much to do because the Vietnam War is dying down. The civil rights movement is out of its pinnacle at this point. And obviously a government program doesn't stop. There isn't a government program doesn't start, employ people, and then say, oh, okay, we're shutting down. Even if they do, they just find make work sort of meaningless sit around jobs for these people, especially if they're involved in intelligence, because they have to buy them off. That's why 93% of all government jobs today require no actual work. Because
you mean like the entire Department of Homeland Security?
Department of Homeland Security, toll booths, the Department of Energy, the Department of Labor. These are people building, even right down to a city level, building inspectors, health inspectors. These people are all, mostly these jobs were set up, even though they're not populated by these people now, they were set up to as like these retirement plans for former intelligence people, basically to pay them off. Here, just come here. You can sit at this job. You can look at the internet once they had that, but you don't have to do anything. So that's our, people think government grows because Republicans are in power and they have all these aggressive things they want to do. So government grows and then Democrats get in power and do the same thing. No, it's all the result of intelligence black projects and paying off people to make sure they don't go public.
So what you're alleging is, as we're stepped back all the way to the 1950s now, and this meeting, I want to go back just for a moment. This meeting with Crane, what year was this?
When I first encountered Crane was, I think it was 2010, towards the end of 2010, maybe the beginning of 2011.
Okay, so now you've got my attention.
Yep.
That's for sure. We've gone back from this moment in time all the way back to the 1950s. How do the two intertwine?
Right. Well, like I was saying, COINTELPRO can't shut down even though they have nothing to do. But luckily for them in the early 1970s, there's this growing political philosophy called libertarianism. And they look at what libertarianism is. They look at it as, you know, it's so different than the other political ideologies at the time because it applies reason. It has a strong ethical grounding. And the government looks at the philosophy of libertarianism and they say, you know, within 2 years, any reasonable person who can feed and dress themselves is going to be one of these, and we're going to be in big trouble. So we have to infiltrate this thing and discredit it. Now, they didn't, I think they underestimated the efficacy of their own school system, because once libertarianism was out there and it was getting some press, the people still said, yeah, whatever. I think I'm probably going to still vote for Hubert Humphrey this year. So the program basically goes into incubation. They don't need it. And they can't infiltrate it because it's too sparse. It doesn't have like a centralized hub like other movements do. There is no leader. It's leaderless. So they say, okay, if we can't infiltrate it for intelligence gathering, we have to put somebody inside to say things that will discredit it. But they realize, even though this project starts, project codename So Erotic begins in the early 1970s, they don't need to use it for almost 30 years.
I see. Now the puzzle pieces are starting to come together. I'm starting to see a better picture, especially on that line, well, the name So Erotic, and then talking about using people to discredit it. Somebody like Jamie Crane would be the ultimate pawn to discredit an entire movement, that's for sure.
Well, at one point, they have 1,000 prospects, and they're watching people. They get lists from schools to see, like, people who have trouble in school, who exhibit bizarre behavior. And over the course of a couple decades, they narrow the list down from 1,000 prospects to be this person. Say, what we're looking for is somebody who is kind-hearted, who has an approachable face, a kind eyes and a smile, but is also relatively simple-minded so they can be a dupe, and has a personality so offensive that they could discredit any idea just by talking about it for 5 minutes. So you see, this starts with a huge candidate pool that is eventually, by the beginning of the 21st century, narrowed down to one person.
And that one person would be Jamie Crane.
That one person would be Jamie Crane. And the way they get him after watching him for years is like intelligence people, they want people that they can trick. Like the operatives, they want dupes. That they want Manchurian candidates that they can control because they don't have, you know, a high degree of intelligence or critical thinking. But they also want people who are efficient and competent if properly motivated. So when they're trying to sell this idea to Jamie, they tell him, we will give you what we know you've always wanted. They've been watching him since he was a boy, and they know he has a dream. They know he has this great ambition that he has been unable to achieve now in his mid-20s when they first approach him in the beginning of the 21st century.
We're talking tonight with Brett Vinat, going behind the curtain and pulling the curtain back and exposing the dupes that are the Wheels Off Liberty. At one point, self-proclaimed number one liberty or political podcast to be found online. Now we're seeing an entirely different side of them. Brett, continue on. You say that they found Jamie's one true dream, and that's what they used to coerce him into this program.
Sure, and I think before we get into that, we need to talk a little bit about who James T. Crane actually is. Jamie is a lovable character. People like him. He's the one at the family gatherings when, as a boy, they're saying, oh, look at Jamie throwing his tennis shoes at a beehive again. That boy, he just loves honey so much. Look at him go.
He's like everybody's little Pooh Bear.
He is.
Sure.
And by they find as they start to work with him, as they start to bring him into this project, really just, I mean, he's from the South and they tell him it's patriotic, you can help your country. But they realize that it's going to be more challenging than they thought. Like at one point, the whole thing almost stalls out because one of the things they do just to try and sell this idea to him is, don't you want to have a purpose? Don't you want to have a purpose? But Jamie thinks that they say, don't you want to have a porpoise? And he says, oh, yeah, I always wanted a porpoise. And then it becomes this big, like, can we cut the bureaucratic red tape? Can we get this man a pet porpoise? All kinds of things from Jamie's past come up at this point. Apparently, when he was younger, his parents took him to SeaWorld, and he showed his penis to a seal. So they have to bring this up. It gets very uncomfortable. And he tries to rationalize it. He says, that was a long time ago. I was only 17. And the whole thing almost stalls out. But they're able to bring him back in with this promise. What Jamie wants more than anything in the world, being from Oklahoma, is his own car racing league that can be competitive with NASCAR. Now, this is just a dream that he comes up with. He's out in right field in Little League, and this, you know, his nose is out of good boogers, and he just starts daydreaming. He just starts thinking of, you know, these wild things. And NASCAR wasn't a big deal in the early 80s when he was playing Little League. So he forms this idea, and he says, I want my own fast car going around a track league. But he keeps it secret because he doesn't want anyone to steal the idea. So, you know, like when people say when you're alone too much, if you live by yourself, you start to go crazy. You start to do weird things and no one's there to say, hey, man, you know, that's a weird thing to do. Well, when you keep an idea secret in what is a very confused and limited mind, that idea starts to mutate. And at some point he says, OK, I don't just want a car racing league. I want all the drivers to be midgets. That's the first step. And then the idea continues to devolve. He says, no, now all the midgets, I want them to be post-op transsexuals. And this is like the idea that he's building in his head. This is the thing that he wants. This is his greatest ambition. But he has no way to achieve it. He doesn't have the money. He doesn't have the business savvy. So they promise it to him. If you come in, you will be helping your country. You will have a purpose, not a porpoise. You will have a purpose. And in the end, when we achieve our goals, you will have the Jamie Crane Midget Transvestite Car Racing League.
This is more than revelatory. This picture that you are painting of this James T. Crane as a young man going into his 20s now, it's all coming into great focus and clarity, Brett. Continue on. I'm simply fascinated. This is certainly not even what I had thought had transpired to lead up to the Wheels Off Liberty.
Sure, and that's why I wanted to come on your show, because I heard you hinting at this. Now, people should listen to Wheels Off Liberty and say something stinks. Something's not right here. What is this? And I'm glad to see that people are starting to do that, but because I have this firsthand experience, and since that experience, I've done a tremendous amount of research trying to connect these dots. I really think it was important to, even though it's certainly risky for my career, to tell this story. So at this point, Jamie, the project so erotic to discredit libertarianism really is ramped back up in sometime around 2009. That's where they start getting it going again, because they see the success of the Ron Paul campaign. And they see that all of these people are now attracted to libertarianism, something that initially they didn't think they were going to have to worry for a while. But over 30 years, have gone by at this point, and it's becoming a real threat. So they Project So Erotic is a go, and Jamie Crane is their man, but he's not competent by himself. So they have to pair him with another with an operative, somebody who's going to act as his handler. And this is where the character, I have no idea who this man really is, but the character that we know as Mike Maddox comes into the picture.
I was just going to ask that question. The M&M, so to speak, yeah. The double M, Mike Maddox. Okay, I wondered when we were going to get to him. He has certainly been much more suspect, while Jamie is much more interesting in a lot of ways, just for the twisted perversions that he throws out on a regular basis and the filth and the vile that comes from his mouth. It's always been fairly obvious that he doesn't quite fit alone.
Yeah.
He has to have somebody else leading him. That's always been my gut reaction. And apparently, according to you, Brett Vinat, that's where this Mike Maddox comes into play.
Yeah, and he is the real disinformation agent. He is like an octopus. He has tentacles reaching into all kinds of different intelligence organizations, the CIA, the NSA. He has some connections to the Israeli Mossad. And he is a super secret kind of deep cover guy who comes up. And this is his thing. He comes up and he guides, just quietly guides things where they need to go. Well, you would think that most of what's going on Wheels Off Liberty is Jamie. So what Mike does, because Jamie is very malleable, he's easy to manipulate, he will say, Jamie, talk about liberty for 5 minutes, but then say something about like buying Coke on the internet or watching madthumbs.com or having sex with a duck-billed platypus. So eventually what you get after a repetition, you know, like 60 or 70 half hours of this routine, is you have people making these associations between libertarianism and drug use, libertarian and promiscuous sexual behavior. I mean, these guys have almost single, like the two of them, this project has almost discredited the Free State Project entirely. Those people in New Hampshire don't do drugs and engage in promiscuous sexual behavior. Those are all implanted ideas from Wheels Off Liberty.
This makes so much more sense to me now. I never could understand how two so-called Okies could figure out, number one, how to use the internet.
I said that before, yeah.
Right, how to actually record anything and use, quote, you know, so-called high technology, as Jamie Crane might put it. Now I understand that they have not gone alone. This is really despicable. It's reprehensible. And Brett, you are just telling me everything that I had a gut feeling on to begin with. I'm so glad that we can work together and wake people up for the shills and the lizards that these two slime balls really are.
Right. And well, it's not so much Jamie. I mean, Jamie is the dupe in this. And, you know, if he had never been co-opted this way, if he had never been recruited and like from the being a prospect as a young boy, picking his nose in right field and throwing shoes at beehives for honey, and being observed and being scouted like that, it could have just as easily been their number two or their number three. So, I mean, I don't want to say that Jamie is an innocent victim in this. When you look at how his actions and his words have done so much to discredit the libertarian movement, he certainly, even if he is a dupe, he certainly bears some responsibility. But what happens next is interesting, and we're almost back to the point of the story where I came to meet him. The Wheels Off Liberty project is going, or Project So Erotic, which manifests, as far as we know, as the Wheels Off Liberty podcast, is going incredibly well. No one takes Ron Paul seriously. The Free State Project is not gaining the traction that it expected. And what happens next is interesting, and it's a big turning point in the story. In 2011, the agent that we call Maddox, is his talents, his skill set is needed elsewhere. There's another movement growing that they want him to infiltrate. So suddenly Wheels Off Liberty stops. Maddox is pulled off that assignment And he is sent to New York City to a growing movement called Occupy Wall Street. The Maddox identity is dumped. It just goes in the trash. It's just the records are burned. And that character that we knew as Mike Maddox becomes Roger Haybeard, who is going to infiltrate Occupy Wall Street as a hippie. And he's just a chameleon. He goes from one to the other and eventually winds up pretty successfully discrediting that by turning it into like this socialist, you know the story. I mean, we all know what happened. So in the meantime, you have Jamie Crane, who has no purpose now. He is very restless. He's asking questions about the car racing league at this point, which was promised to him several years earlier. They're worried that he's going to talk, and he's also like, "And where's my porpoise? You know, I never got my porpoise either." Right. It's a real mess at this point. So eventually, and this is a conglomeration. This is not just CIA. This is not just NSA. This goes up into deep, dark, secret places. The people who are overseeing this project, CIA and NSA, are involved, as well as Mossad. Because that's how Maddox comes into this as well, or the entity that we call Maddox.
Well, I'm going to stop you for just one moment. Is this? I think it's pretty obvious, but this is why I've noticed that it's primarily Maddox on a regular basis on Wheels Off Liberty, you know, making fun of the Bilderbergs and making fun of this and that and conspiracy theories, also trying to discredit all of that to try to take the spotlight off of himself and what he's doing.
Sure. There. Yeah, and it's amazing how they do that, too, because if you hear Maddox on the show mention one of these secretive groups, that's actually, from my experience, a good indication that he probably has some pretty solid connections to that group. In fact, there is this very secret and esoteric group of eugenicists that are like a conglomeration of members of the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, P2, Club of Rome, the Fabian Society, and what their whole thing is to use government and science. You notice there's a lot of mysticism in the intelligence organization. We look at how the origins of the CIA came out of Skull and Bones, where they do all these satanic rituals. And we also notice that people who are in Skull and Bones are often accused of like throwing up these satanic hand signals in their speeches. You know what I mean? So Maddox has close connections to this very secretive group. And they're eugenicists. They believe in making the perfect human civilization, a utopia, a socialist utopia, using genetic engineering and the force of the government to create the perfect utopian society. They are called the Greatness Society. That is their name. So when you hear Maddox, or when Maddox gets Crane to say it, the word greatness on the show, that is like that satanic hand signal that the politicians do. It's just letting their leaders know that they're still on board with the agenda.
I always wondered where that came from. I knew that had to be some secret.
It makes no sense.
No, not at all. He'll do it too on his Facebook page a lot. Somebody will say something like, "Hey, Mike, when is the next show coming?" And he'll say, "Greatness." And it just comes out of nowhere.
Right.
And it just kind of left me flabbergasted many a times. But now it all comes into great clarity.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Like you would say, when you're enjoying something, we say, "Oh, I'm really enjoying that." That's my favorite beer. Or this is very refreshing. Or I really am happy with your Facebook post. That's how we talk. We don't say just greatness in all capital letters. That's another real red flag that he is sending signals just to let people know that the agenda is still moving forward. And but at this point, he's gone. He's out of the picture. He's in New York ruining Occupy Wall Street. And Crane is a mess without him. And most of these the people who are managing the project say, we got to get rid of this guy. We can't work with him anymore. And we don't know if we're going to be able to pull that project back together. So they kidnap him, you know, the whole black windowless van thing. They throw a bag over his head and they drug him and throw him in an alley in Ardmore. And the reason why they do that is because if he tries to talk, I mean, they gave him such a heavy cocktail of drugs that they were hoping it would almost wipe his memory. This is like real Manchurian Candidate stuff. But at the same time, he would exhibit such irrational drug-induced behavior that if he tried to talk to anybody about what he had been involved in, he would just discredit himself immediately. No one would take him seriously. So that's why they do that. It was that or the heart attack gun that the CIA often uses. You know what that is. But in Crane's case, they consider – I don't know if it had something to do with, like, they want to keep him around in case they need him for later. But at this point, they cut loose of him, and this is where the story crosses with me, with my experience when I find him in an alley after a very successful international business trip.
Talking to Brett Benatt tonight here on the Fajita Fun Time, going behind the curtain and exposing. It leaves me a bit overwhelmed to know that this kind of satanic, controlling nonsense is even allowed to be piped in and pumped in, and not allowed, I should say, but encouraged by those that we're supposed to hold in high regard, high respect, our leadership, our own government, so to speak. Brett, carry on.
So at this point, another really interesting thing happens. I go back to New Hampshire, and I'm talking to a person who at the time I thought was a Free Stater. And I'm telling him, we're talking about Wheels Off Liberty. What happened to Wheels Off Liberty? Why did it just disappear? And at the same time, I've developed kind of a casual friendship. I don't know if I'd call it a friendship. It was more with Jamie. It was more kind of like the relationship that Curious George has with the man in the yellow hat. It's not, you know, I care about him and I want him to be okay.
Good analogy.
I want him to be safe. So, you know, I'm back in New Hampshire. I'm talking with somebody who I thought at the time was a Free Stater, and I'm telling him the story and kind of we're lamenting about the loss of Wheels Off Liberty. And this person says to me, "You should do Wheels Off Liberty." This makes no sense to me at the time because I'm not Wheels Off. I'm not from the South. That's not my sense of humor. I am running a very respectable podcast of my own. I don't have time to do Wheels Off Liberty. But in retrospect, I believe I was drugged because within a half an hour, I was agreeing to do the Wheels Off Liberty podcast, and I found myself on the phone with Jamie Crane planning a comeback episode. Well, turns out this person that I thought was a Free Stater was this guy who was calling himself Mandrick. He had infiltrated the Free State posing as like a Greek pastry chef, and he's Pakistani intelligence.
I wondered where this so-called George fella came from.
Right. Yeah. So and he's another guy just with tentacles everywhere. He's supposed to be doing some kind of contract with the CIA or the NSA in the United States. I don't know where. But he's ISI. He's ISI. He's Inter-Services Intelligence, which is Pakistani.
Wait. I want to stop you for just one moment. You say you suddenly realize you were probably drugged. Do you think, had you eaten some of his baklava? Is that what had happened?
That's interesting because he was there cooking that night. And a lot of other people were behaving very strangely. Like kind of an antisocial behavior.
That would make sense. I've never trusted that baklava bit too. That also seemed a bit put upon.
Yeah,
it seemed a bit, you know, going back to throwing out symbols of the New World Order and the satanic symbols. That also seemed to play some sort of a role in that exact same manner.
Yeah, yeah, and even the shape of baklava, the triangle, that's one of their symbols. So. Yeah, I don't know too much about him, and he is still – I don't know if I should say too much about him because he's still sort of lingering around and involved in the community, and I don't know what the implications of this are going to be. Now, obviously, Jamie Crane can't say anything about any of this to anybody, right? Because if they find out, they will kill him. But I can, because if they find out that I said anything to anybody, they'll kill Jamie Crane. So I think I'm in the clear, but if we want to keep going with the story, I've agreed to do Wheels Off Liberty. I'm the new co-host of Wheels Off Liberty. I don't know how this happened. And at this time, I realized that this Mandrick is basically just an intelligence freelancer who knows about Project So Erotic and decided to reactivate it on his own. He's a rogue. So now he wants to use it against me. An interesting thing, at the time I agree to do this, I have one of the most successful podcasts on the entire internet. I'm getting 4 million downloads per episode. Long story short, 3 months later, after continuous associations between me and Jamie Crane, you can go and you can check on Podomatic. I'm lucky to get 4,000 downloads per one episode. So that was the impact of this disinformation, discrediting, infiltration of libertarianism that is an intelligence project. It's very sad.
That makes perfect sense now, because I'll tell you, you brought a great demeanor to the show. Things certainly changed. There was finally intelligence on Wheels Off Liberty once you joined up with Jamie Crane. But at the same time, it's working against you, Brett, because your own show, where you are a lot more serious, you're presenting all the facts, you're presenting everything in a format where people can truly understand liberty, and you might actually change some minds out there. It's down the tubes now. It's down the drain. It's been flushed down the old toilet, all because of your association with Jamie Crane.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want people to think that I'm bitter about that, because I understand that to a certain extent, he's a victim in this too. I mean, I understand how destructive his path has been, but I mean, he is a victim in this as well. And I just want people to know. And what really made me finally decide to come forward after the show just vanishes again. Around episode 95, Crane is just gone again, and nobody knows what happened to him. And at this point, I don't know if it's reprogramming, doing like a memory wipe to reactivate the project again. But wouldn't you know it, 3 months later, he's back, and now Maddox is back in the picture as well. So I think this is, for me, looking at this revival of Wheels Off Liberty in our current political climate, this tells me that the ruling elite and the intelligence, their intelligence operatives and henchmen, they've moved this whole thing into an end game. At this point, something big is about to happen.
Well, and I think you're right, because usually the exposure begins to happen right before it's too late. I'll be honest, I had fallen under the spell. I had actually listened to Wheels Off Liberty and laughed at inappropriate times. I found myself drinking a lot heavier.
Mm.
I lost a woman over that show. And suddenly, as I came out of my own cloud of darkness, after Satan had let go of me, so to speak, I suddenly realized the danger that it is. But again, my friend, I think it might just be too late. How many children have been exposed to them? How many wives have left their husbands because of them? How many husbands have gone into the chicken coop and done unspeakable sodomite acts with the chickens because of them? I think we are heading down the wrong path, and I think our society and the liberty movement is in danger, and I'm not even sure if it can be saved at this point.
I don't know either. I mean, I hope there's something that can be done. I really hate to see it just taken down from the inside like this. I think it would be so tragic. It has so much promise. It makes so much sense as not politics, but as just a philosophy. I'm hurt that I became involved in this to the extent that I did. I'm hurt that it ruined my show as much as it did. I'm working very hard to bring it back right now. But I think we need to really, this should be an indication that we're probably going to see some major government expansion, and we're going to see some pretty egregious steps in the next few months.
That is going to be the case. All I can say to you, my friend, is I'm glad that you were able to break free of these chains. I'm glad to hear that you restored the clarity and the goodness that is you. And I'm really proud and pleased to say this is the first moment on the Fajita Fun Time that you have felt brave enough to come forward and expose the Wheels Off Liberty for all they truly are.
Exactly. Like I said, if anyone finds out I did this, they're only going to kill Jamie Crane. So,
well, Brett, tell us about yourself. Tell us where we can find out more information about you and about your show.
Sure. My show is barely surviving right now at schoolsucksproject.com. You can check us out on YouTube at user/schoolsuckspodcast. That's our YouTube extension. And the podcast, The School Sucks Podcast, find it on iTunes. Please do what you can to save it. I really put a lot into it, and I hate to see it just evaporate because of a simple mistake that I made.
Certainly listen to the show. It's true liberty. Turn off the wheels off liberty. Delete everything that you have from these guys and go to a true liberty-minded individual activist who's doing so much, Mr. Brett Vinat. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian. And I really admire your courage for covering this topic.
Brett Vinat, I appreciate that, but it's not courage. It's a calling. It's something I have to do for the future of our children, the future of our liberty, and the future of our republic.
Okay, well, first of all, I want to just say thank you to all of the people who purchased the Ultimate History Lesson using the School Sucks coupon code. That's at ultimatehistorylesson.com, and you can also learn more about that at tragedyandhope.com. And you can see some clips of that video on YouTube. Again, the Ultimate History Lesson, A Weekend with John Taylor Gatto, and the people who helped out all of us, Tragedy and Hope, Mr. Gatto himself, and School Sucks Podcast, Michelle, Don, Takidol, Lee, and James. And there's actually one more person whose name belongs on that list. I don't have that name right now, but I will get it. They were the first person who did it, and I will let you know. I also want to thank Eric in Bedford, New Hampshire, for his one-time, or actually two-time, donation. Very generous donation, so thank you to Eric. Now, six new monthly subscribers. First of all, I want to start with John, who is in Fishkill, New York. John and I also play Words with Friends, and I think that's going quite well. But I know what you're saying. Fishkill, what kind of a name is that for a place? Well, Fishkill is in New York. And you'll find that a lot of places in New York have the word kill in them. You have the Baton Kill River, Cobleskill. There's too many to name. What is that all about? Well, most of New York was settled by the Dutch. And kill is a Dutch word for a waterway. And it just got tacked on. There's a lot of waterways in New York. So that gets tacked on to a lot of stuff. Of course, the Hudson River, named after Henry Hudson, no kill in that, but he's not Dutch. Do you see how that works? So thank you, John. And moving on to Kim in Quebec City. That's up in Canada. And did you know Quebec City is home to the world's narrowest house, just 12 feet wide? It's on Rue. That's how you say street in French. Donnacona, 12-foot-wide house, very narrow house. Quebec City, also the birthplace and boyhood home of the comedian Norm Macdonald. You might remember him from Saturday Night Live. He did Weekend Update. He was also in Billy Madison and other things. So thank you, Kim. Next, we have Dawn, who's down in Richardson, Texas. Richardson, Texas was actually ranked as the 18th best place to live in all of the United States by Money Magazine. The fourth best place to live in Texas. Jessica Simpson would agree. She grew up there. So thanks again to Don. Let's move on to Violetta, who is in Brooklyn, New York. And while we've got a real theme of childhood homes, you know who grew up in Brooklyn, New York? Well, a lot of people grew up in Brooklyn, New York. Here's the first one that comes to my mind. I'm trying not to use Wikipedia too much for this. I've used it once so far. Doris Kearns Goodwin, the author of books like Team of Rivals about Abraham Lincoln and No Ordinary Time about FDR. And she also has a book about Lyndon Johnson, which means that she wrote books perpetuating the myths of heroism about three people who I think were in our top five worst presidents of all time. She's also friends with my mom, which means there's a very real possibility that sometime in the future I will get a chance to speak with her again. Last time I talked to her, I think I was 14. But this time, I will have more to talk about. And if that ever happens, I will certainly report back to you on how it goes. I'm going to bring up those books. I also want to say thank you to Joe, who is my friend on Facebook, but I have no idea where he lives. See, he did something a little different. He paid the whole year all at once, which was awesome because that really helps right now. But Joe H., so you know who I'm talking about, thank you very much for doing that. And if I find out where you live, I'll get a fact ready about that place. And finally, that brings us to Alec, who is in Manchester, New Hampshire. This is a guy who's been on the show before. Manchester, New Hampshire, of course, that's where I used to live. Got a lot of friends in that town, and it's about 15, 20 minutes away from where I live right now. But Alec was the guy who was on the show, the first installment of the Keys series, the decentralization of information and communication. And we talked about his website, alickeys.com. So thank you so much for subscribing, everybody. I really appreciate it. And if I missed anybody, please let me know. It certainly could happen, like things get lost in the shuffle. If you subscribed and you were not featured here and you would like to be, just shoot me an email and I will certainly correct that. Also, just want to say a quick thanks to Tony, who's out in California. He's the guy who's working on the new School Sucks website. Hoping to have that done around the end of June, maybe by Pork Fest. But we've had a little bit of a change of plans. First of all, he and I, we've developed a very good working relationship. Spend a few weeks each week on Skype, just chatting it up, talking about the site, talking about things not related to the site. At this point, we could pretty much start our own podcast with these conversations if you wanted to. But yeah, I like I said, I really trust his judgment at this point, and he has decided that he wants to build the site from the ground up, not using WordPress, not relying on plugins or software that, you know, might need updates at some point in the future. I know a lot of people use WordPress, but I really trust Tony to take creative control of this project, and that might mean that it's going to take a little bit longer, but I think it will be worth it. And when it is out, all of these people who have subscribed, you'll get access to some additional content. If you've subscribed and you want a sample of some of that, a silly little video, or maybe even some audio, let me know. Send me an email and maybe I can find a way to get you something. Otherwise, you might be waiting until, you know, like the end of June, somewhere around there. But big things, once we have a great new site to show everybody, I'm going to be trying to continue to push on YouTube, get more people into schoolsucksproject.com. I might pursue some bigger name guests. And it's very exciting, things ahead. So,
new subscriber, geography, trivia, you just say a person's name and then tell a fact about where they live.